Welcome to thedreamshake.com. This is Tom Martin, and on the phone today with me is Jason Friedman of Rockets.com. And Jason, first of all, I'd like to congratulate you for successfully surpassing Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle for most all-time Dreamshake appearances with two. So feel free to celebrate and whatnot, but thanks for coming on, and how are things in Houston?
They're great. They're great. And I would add to that statement by saying that's probably the only way I've ever surpassed Jonathan Fagan. I've never surpassed him. I've got a lot of respect for what he does and then the work that he puts in. But, no, everything is great. I would probably, you know, if I were being picky, opt for a little bit better weather and a little bit better record right now for the team I cover and work for. But all things considered, when you write and talk about basketball for a living, you don't really have much of a right to complain. So things are good. Things are good.
I'm with you there, but, you know, speaking of that team we love, I guess, you know, they've had a bad history of Januaries, and this one was no different. Aside from just hating the month itself, what was the most important reason for this, you know, tough stretch for the Rockets, and especially against the easy schedule? What contributed to that kind of lull over the past month?
Well, I think, you know, it's never just one factor, but if I were to pinpoint the biggest, I would say that it really comes down to the fact the league caught up a little bit to the Rockets in January. I think that entering the season, the Rockets were very much an unknown commodity, you know, with the change in style in terms of playing more up-tempo and pushing the pace, and in terms of the change in personnel with no Yao Ming and Ron Artest gone, replaced by Trevor Ariza, you know, that the Rockets were sort of this big question mark. Nobody really knew how are they going to play, who are going to be their go-to guys, and I think there was a notion based on the games the team saw against the Lakers, how the Rockets would play and who would be their go-to guys. But that's one thing. Seeing it actually on the court is another. So I think that over the first couple of months, the Rockets surprised some people. But I do think that over that time, the league compiled enough film and the scouting got a little bit better in terms of isolating what you have to do against this team in order to have success. And obviously, at least from the defensive end, you've got to slow down Aaron Brooks and try to keep him out of the lane, and you've got to, you know, pay attention to Carl Landry, and that means more double teams, especially in the fourth quarter. And that's something Carl, you know, even has admitted multiple times that he hasn't seen since college, and he's, you know, going through an adjustment process. And I think that really the entire team right now is going through an adjustment process, because the opposition has clearly adapted to what the Rockets do well.
Uh-huh.
Now it is the Rockets' turn to try and adjust right back. And, of course, that's easier said than done, especially when you have the limited options that the Rockets have at their disposal right now.
What do you think the Rockets do if Landry is being, you know, receiving all this attention in the fourth quarter? I guess he was really their guy for the first half of the season, and now with him being, you know, as you said, double-teamed more often, who do you, besides Aaron Brooks, unless that's the guy, who else do they look to step up in that quarter?
That's the question, right? I mean, you know, if you had a healthy Kyle Lowry and the matchups allow you to play Aaron and Kyle at the same time, then that gives you a different option in terms of attacking the defense. Kyle's not a volume scorer by any stretch of the imagination, but he can certainly make things happen on offense. But when you look at other guys on the squad right now who can create for themselves and for their teammates, that list is essentially Aaron Brooks and Kyle Lowry, at least on a consistent basis. And so that really is the problem I think the Rockets are facing now when they go up against elite teams.
Yeah.
Is the fact that they just don't have the firepower that other clubs do. And, you know, if those teams are able to take out Aaron and Carl, which is easier said than done, granted, but if they're able to have success doing that, then that's when you see the Rockets sort of get into these funks and these lulls. And then, of course, the flip side of that is, well, the Rockets would say, look, we don't want to get into a half-court battle with anyone anyway. We want to push the tempo and generate some easy points on a fast break, but you've got to get stops to do that. And that's the other part of the equation, is the fact that this Rockets team defensively is not up to the standard that this club has set in years past. And, of course, there's a very good reason for that, and that's the fact that the team just doesn't really have any sort of rim protection right now. The only way they can consistently stop teams in the paint is to try and take charges. And that's good, but if that's your only option, it's not great. And you're seeing that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I looked up this stat a week ago from hoopdata.com, I believe.
It's a great website.
Yes, fantastic website. Awesome resource. And I think the Rockets are fourth worst in the league when it comes to the field goal percentage they allow in the paint, basically, with under 5 feet. And, you know, that's what's going to happen when your starting center is 6'6", and you don't really have anybody who is a great shot blocker. I mean, the Rockets' top shot blocker, I believe, as of at least a week ago, and that is still probably the case, is Shane Battier.
Yeah.
And, you know, that pretty much tells you all you need to know about what the opposition is facing when they get into the lane.
Well, do you think that the Rockets can, you know, shore up their defensive problems and go back to how they were playing to start the season? And do you think they can still be a playoff team right now, or is that, you know, more in doubt given the recent events?
Well, I think it's probably more in doubt now than it was, say, a month ago. I mean, I think after the New Year's Eve game and they beat Dallas, and, you know, the Mavs were a club that just wiped the Rockets out the first two times they played, and then about the Zach being spent twice, once on the road, you think, okay, this is a club that could be anywhere from a 6 to 8 seed, and they looked like they were sitting pretty, especially given the fact that they faced the hardest part of the schedule. Then everything didn't really go according to plan in January, as we discussed earlier, and now here they sit on the outside looking in, but I don't think you can discount their chances. I think this team still has a good shot at making the playoffs, especially because I think that there's no question some sort of deal is coming. And just as you mentioned, the Rockets have had issues in January. This has been a time of year where they have picked it up and gone on a bit of a roll. Now, granted, those clubs had Yao Ming, had Tracy McGrady. That makes a big difference. This club doesn't have that. But who knows what or whom this team will have come the February 18th deadline. And, of course, you know, that doesn't just apply to the Rockets. That applies to teams like Phoenix, San Antonio, Oklahoma City could be a player as well. We just don't know. But I think that Daryl Morey's track record is more than good enough that you have to give him the benefit of the doubt, saying that if the Rockets do pull the trigger, and they almost certainly will on some sort of deal, that they will probably be better the last 2 months of the season that we've seen the last 4 weeks, say.
Well, we've heard a lot of different rumors. We've heard of Caron Butler from Washington. We've heard of Andre Iguodala from Philadelphia. Do you have a preferred deal in mind, if any at all?
Well, I'm still keeping my fingers crossed on that Tracy McGrady for LeBron James trade.
I think we all are.
You know, as long as we're keeping it in reality, let's just throw out the two deals that you mentioned. I will say I'm not crazy about the Iguodala-Dallenberg trade. I just think that that's taking on a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
And I like Iguodala as a player. Obviously a very good two-way player, but I don't see him being the offensive force that this club needs long-term in terms of a wing scorer. And I think that you know, if you bring him in, obviously you're committing to him. And because what he has, another 4 years left on his contract.
Something like that, yeah.
A lot of money. And I just don't know if that's the guy who's going to help you be a championship team. Is it an improvement? No question. No question at all. I just don't know if it's enough based on the projected core of this team. And there's so many assumptions when you're looking 2-3 years down the line. You know, is Yao Ming still going to be with the team? We don't know. but if you're assuming that the core is something along the lines consisting of Iguodala, Yao Ming, Aaron Brooks, is that enough, assuming that you have the other pieces around there, to get you over the hump? I sort of kind of doubt it. On the other hand, if you're looking at Caron Butler, Brendan Haywood, clearly that makes you significantly better for this year. Then Haywood comes off the books. You're probably not going to be able to re-sign him because they'll probably, as you know, big men do, go for a pretty penny in the offseason. If you can't bring him back, you still have Butler at the wing. I think is a better offensive player than Iguodala at this point. Plus, you only have 1 year left, so you get a year to see how that works. You're not committed to him for the next four, and for his price, what is he, $10 million next year, I believe?
$10 or $11 million, yes.
Good. Yeah, so I think that would be my preferred deal out of those two. But, you know, of course that there are other options out there, and as these things go, you know, those are, we know that Philadelphia is in the mix, Washington's in the mix, New York is in the mix, but there's always going to be a team sort of lurking off the radar. I mean, we think of just last year at the trade deadline, I don't think anybody saw the Kyle Lowry deal coming.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people reacted to that with, you know, a scratch of their heads and a puzzled look, and we see, you know, how well it worked out a year later. I wouldn't rule out the possibility of something along those lines happening again, where, you know, we're talking about Butler and Iguodala and, you know, Kevin Martin and guys like that, and then all of a sudden February 18th comes and said it's somebody completely different. But there's no question that, you know, Daryl's working the phones pretty hardcore right now. He and a lot of basketball ops guys have been holed up in the dungeon for the last week and will be for the next 2 weeks for sure. And, you know, I know that he'd like to bring in a big man as well. So we'll see. It's going to be a very interesting couple weeks around here.
Well, you know, if you're saying that he wants to bring in a big man and, you know, of course you like Butler, with the whole Butler-Haywood deal, I guess the one thing that I've been, you know, reading, I think everyone's read, obviously, is Luis Scola. Do you think he'd be worth giving up in a deal that would bring in Butler and Haywood?
Good question. I think that if he is the extra piece you have to give up, that's hard. I'd probably do it just because there's so much uncertainty about whether or not you're going to be able to bring him back anyway. And, you know, the old saying goes, you know, you've got to give up something to get something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and typically any good trade is going to hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt. I mean, if you're giving up a Scola or a Lowry or a Landry or a Brooks, you know,
well, I think better Scola than someone else who's younger, you know?
What's that?
I think it'd be better giving up Scola, who only has another year left. Or I guess he expires this year, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's restricted this summer.
Yeah.
That's why I say that if you're giving him up, part of the reason has to be that, one, obviously, like, he's very much a valued commodity in NBA circles.
Mm-hmm.
But two, the fact that there's no guarantee you're going to be able to bring him back anyway, because there's no doubt that he's going to be due a raise this summer.
Yeah. Well, you know, shifting gears a bit here, I guess you mentioned Kyle Lowry. He's been out for a little while now, and Rockets called up popular D-League point guard Will Conroy, and I guess the first game he was in, I think Rick Adelman said that, you know, the team didn't perform well with him, but it wasn't necessarily his fault. And I'm assuming Conroy's going to be around until Lowry gets, you know, better, and they might send him back down or whatnot. But how do you think the team adjusts to Conroy now running the show without Lowry?
Well, I think the obvious thing that you see is just the fact that Kyle was the engine that really drove that second unit. And without him, you just don't have the spark, at least not yet, that the second unit brought throughout the entire first half of the season. I mean, you almost took it for granted, the fact that the subs were going to come in and it was going to be an energy boost and the tempo was going to get pushed and raised and the pace of play was just going to go up a couple notches.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that with Will. And that's something I think the Rockets have been missing the last couple of days, and that's why that their second unit has not really produced the way it had, and that's not surprising. I mean, Kyle was one heck of a backup point guard and clearly fit with guys like Chase and Carl Landry very, very well. And, you know, the Rockets have had some pretty subpar second quarters the last two games. Granted, you know, you're asking a whole lot of a guy who just came up from the D League and then thrusting him in there and saying, you know, replace this guy that's been one of the more valuable members of the team. He's not going to be able to duplicate what Kyle brings. But it will be interesting to see the next three games here before the All-Star break if Will continues to get more comfortable. Because, you know, these games, you know, okay, you say Philadelphia, that should be a win, but right now, I mean, there just are no guineas for the Rockets. But at Memphis, very tough game.
Yeah.
At Miami, we all saw what Dwayne Wade did to the Rockets at Toyota Center, so you have to assume that's going to be a tough one, too. They're going to need that second unit. That second unit has been huge for this team all year, and Will's going to have to step it up as other players around him.
Well, speaking of another D-leaguer, Joey Dorsey, I guess he came up, got some limited minutes the other night against Phoenix, but, you know, do you think Joey's kind of caught in the abyss right now where he's a, you know, obviously a D-League all-star, been a solid player down there, but really can't crack the rotation up in the NBA? You know, he's young, he's got a lot more time left, but what do you think the future looks like for him in terms of, you know, being a rotation player on the Rockets?
He's definitely in a limbo state right now, and as far as his Rockets career is concerned, I think that this is a huge couple months for him. You know, I think that it is somewhat telling that Joey Dorsey, on a team that lacks rim protection, lacks a great interior defensive presence, those are things that he's supposed to bring, and yet he has played all of four meaningful minutes all season long. You know, you can draw whatever conclusions you want from that, but I think that there's no question that he has yet to inspire the full confidence of the coaching staff.
Uh-huh.
And I think that there is an opportunity there for him because the Rockets need somebody like him. But you know, you saw, and Rick even said after the Phoenix game that, look, it's not fair to draw conclusions about Joey Dorsey based on what you saw during a four-minute stretch against Phoenix when he was matched up with an absolutely on-fire Amari Stoudemire.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, as a young guy in the NBA, those are the opportunities you have to make the most of. And Joey needs to do that. And, you know, he said that he's been playing better in practice. The coaches, for the most part, confirmed that. It's going to be interesting to see if he does get more of an opportunity here because, like I said, there's no question. There is a need for the things that Joey Dorsey is supposed to be able to bring. But, you know, this is the Rockets don't have the luxury right now of being experimental, let's say. I mean, every game is important for this club.
Yeah.
And this is not a time to say, okay, we're going to give, you know, a young guy a look for a couple weeks here to see what he does with increased minutes. The Rockets do not have that luxury. They've got to play every game as if it's their last. I know it's a cliche, but, you know, they're in that state right now where every game is their most important. This game tomorrow night against Memphis is huge. And for that reason, you know, Joey is really going to have to wow and convince the coaches in practice because they just don't have the luxury of being able to say, okay, go up there, show us what you can do for 15 minutes.
Definitely, definitely. Well, one more question here, I'll let you go. I guess we've been having this running post here on the Dream Shake where we've been doing this trivia question ordeal, and we've been giving out free tickets and whatnot, but I'm running out of ideas, and I think people might be kind of tired of predictions, so I'm going to put it to you, Jason. Do you have any sort of obscure trivia question about the Rockets that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. You're putting me on the spot here.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Wow. That is a darn good question, and this is not really saying a whole lot for me that I'm not able to think on my feet and come up with a really good one. My goodness. Sad, Tom, that I'm failing you like this. I'm, my brain. I'm trying to think of things that I
remember. That was for the moment.
As a little kid, and watching this team play. Man, I don't know.
You want to take a rain check? Or can you get one?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to like sit down and rack my old brain on this before I can actually come up with something that's anywhere close to half decent.
We're going to figure something out at some point, so look forward to that, and thanks again for coming on. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, Tom, I appreciate you having me.
All right. This is Tom Martin. Thanks for tuning in. See you next time.